Sunday school and preaching.
All right, this morning we're in the book of St. John, chapter 4. On this October, I can't believe this year is just flying by, October the 14th. Kind of a cold Sunday morning, but I'm glad, praise God, my heart's warm.
Yeah.
But we're really enjoying teaching out of the book of John. In my opinion, John is one of the most easiest to understand for a new believer. When someone gets saved, they ought to immediately read the Gospel of St. John. It will so help them. But we're going to be starting in verse 1 of chapter 4. And it says, "When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John." And the next verse kind of puts some context to what that verse says. And it says, "Though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples." But this seems to indicate that even some of John's disciples left him and followed Jesus. And John's disciples are growing smaller in number, and Jesus' disciples and his followers are increasing in number. And that was the whole purpose of John being the forerunner, the voice of one crying in the wilderness. And John pointed people to Jesus, and it pretty much brings that out. And the Pharisees, of course, they're looking for something to have some kind of an argument. And those Pharisees, when they heard about this, there's no telling how they construed it. And verse 3 says, "He left Judea and departed again unto Galilee." The Lord is interested in working, not in arguing. And the Pharisees wanted to argue. And he's gone, and we'll read this here in a minute, for a purpose, one lost individual. But also he's leaving because these Pharisees are going to be disputing, and it comes back because that's all they did was dispute with him. And they were darkness to some degree. Of course, Nicodemus, the last chapter being chapter 3, you know, he came to the light. He might not necessarily understood it, but he got near enough to it that it helped him. And he says in verse 4, he's got a mission here, and he says he must needs go through Samaria. Mm-hmm. There's a Samaritan woman, which is a half-Jew, and he's already aware of her need. Matter of fact, he tells more about her than she does. Mm-hmm. And that's why he said he must needs go through Samaria. I'm so glad that the Lord came to seek and to save those which were lost, and he's seeking her.
That's right.
And that's why he's going where he's going. Verse 5 says, "Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph." And our meat of this chapter starts in this next verse here. And it says, "Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well." And it was about the sixth hour. And it gets ready to start right here, verse 7. It said, "There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water." Now I'm not real smart, but my pastor talked about the time that she come was a time when no one should be there. Everyone done got their water and left, and she's just trying to get to this well to get some water without meeting anyone, without having any discourse or anything with anyone. She just needs to get some water and get back to her house. She's kind of hoping to sneak there and sneak back. She's not wanting to have any fellowship with anybody. And this woman here, she's typical of the sinner. They don't really want anyone to tell them they're a sinner.
Right.
They don't really want you to witness to them or give them a tract or to invite them to church, but they need the tract, they need to get in church, and they need you to witness to them. And this woman, she really represents a sinner real good. She's got no interest at all in Jesus, and yet he's there. And she don't really know who he is, and most sinners don't neither. And he don't make no big deal. He's real clear, real plain, probably the best example in the Bible of a great soul winner winning a great sinner. And this woman of Samaria, she comes to draw water because she's got a physical thirst, but Jesus knows she's got a spiritual thirst. So when she comes to draw this water, Jesus saith to her, "Give me to drink." For his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. There's no one but him and her there. And that's really a good time to witness to someone. It's not before a bunch of gainsayers or someone that maybe wants to change the subject because they don't really want to talk about, being saved or going to church or anything. And they'll try to change the subject to something else. So no one but him and her is here at this well. And it's a perfect time for a soul winner to talk to a sinner about their soul.
One on one.
Yeah, the disciples are gone. No one's around. She's come at a unique time. There's no crowd, just her and Jesus. Then saith the woman, verse 9, of Samaria unto him, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria?" For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. And I've often thought, and I certainly can't prove this, but I've often thought she was kind of making a pass at him in this conversation. And it doesn't matter one way or another. But her interest is not like his interest. He's interested in her soul. Mm-hmm. And she might be interested in something else according to the context of the accusations of her sins that the Lord brings out here shortly. But I've often thought about what she said to Jesus, like what I've seen sinners talk to other sinners is they try to broaden the conversation or test the waters to see what's there.
Yeah.
And then saith a woman of Samaria unto him, and now this may not be true, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me?" In other words, she's trying to see his motive. Why are you asking me to give you a drink? That's why I kind of think that. And I certainly would never do no violence to the Bible. I put it way above anything that I could ever be. The Bible is like the Lord. It's high and lifted up. But it does, to me, think that looks kind of like she's making a pass at him. "How is it thou, being a Jew, ask a drink of me?" And then she goes on to say, "Which am a woman of Samaria." And I guess there was a pause right there, I don't know. But maybe she was kind of hoping he'd say, "I ain't got nothing wrong with the women of Samaria," I don't know. But and then she says, "For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Now, if that was her motive, and it may not have been, but if that was, Jesus clearly declares his motive in verse 10. "Jesus answered and said unto her," and now this is a spiritual response to maybe a worldly question, and like I said, I don't know what her motive was there because she'd had so many husbands, I don't know, but I know one thing, his answer is a spiritual answer. And he said, "If thou knewest the gift of God," and those words right there are enough to clear the air on the conversation. I've heard it said about a lot of preachers. I can't remember this preacher's name, but he said he was taking a trip on an airplane. I almost got his name there. But he said the way they set the seats, he ended up sitting beside this real attractive, very beautiful, blonde-headed young girl. And he said he really felt uncomfortable about sitting there, but the way the airplane works, that's where he had to sit. And so he just immediately turned to her and said, "I'm a saved Baptist preacher." He wanted to make sure that she understood what was beside her before anything proceeded. And Jesus here, kind of in that same category, tells this Samaritan woman, "If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." Now he said a lot right there.
Yeah.
And for a lost person, at least she knows now what his interest is. And this is kind of like a curveball in any conversation that you might have with someone that's lost. They don't really understand. We talk in Bible terms. They don't know the Bible. We talk in saved terms, and they don't know what salvation means. Jesus used this same kind of conversation with Nicodemus, and he couldn't understand it neither. And this discourse that he gives her, for one thing, he lets her know there's something different about this man. Mm. And verse 11, "The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with." She's thinking like a Nicodemus in the physical terms. "And the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water?" That's almost a parallel to the Nicodemus experience when he said, "How can a man be born when he's old? Can he enter the second time into his mother's womb?" And it kind of shows you that day how in darkness or how unlearned the common people were. And even the ones that did know couldn't accept the truth. But the woman here, her response is a physical response. She doesn't answer him in a spiritual way. She answers him, "The well's deep. You ain't even got nothing to draw no water with. How you going to give me a drink?" In verse 12, she says, "Art," now she's a little spiritual right here, "Art thou greater than our father Jacob," which is Israel, "which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle?" Now, she's a little bit spiritual in that statement right there. Jesus kind of puts it over the top in this next verse. "And Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again." And that statement right there, I'm sure, caused her to really understand this conversation's a little different than what she's anticipating about a drink from the well. And the Lord says, "Whosoever drinks of this water will thirst again." And then he goes on, verse 14, "But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life." Now he's talking to a woman, and this feminist movement that's plaguing our day, and I heard the other day that that someone got in trouble in school, a student got in trouble in school by saying "yes ma'am," and she took that term "ma'am" to be an offense to her. And this feminist movement is kind of like the gay same-sex unions and the gender, all of that stuff. Just the least thing offends them. He's talking to a woman, a lost woman, and he says, "The water that I shall give him," he doesn't say her, and I think there's probably a reason for that, because she's got to ask for it, but he's giving this discourse, and he gives it in a male context. "Whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst." Now, some people would have lost him right there because of that word him, and they will just close their mind to whatever I guess you could say they got selective hearing.
Yeah.
They'll hear what they want to hear, what they don't want to hear, they tune it out. But he doesn't say, the water I give her shall never thirst. The water I shall give her shall be in her a well of water springing up. So he doesn't really put it into terms that the world would demand. I'm a woman, you know, and I want you to get that out of the male gender and get it in the female gender. But verse 15, the woman saith unto him, and she says, sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Now Jesus has in a very simple way got this woman thirsty. I've always heard it said that you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make it drink. Well, the Lord has basically led this woman to the water of life, and now she's wanting a drink.
Yeah.
And I guess you can see right there that you can get a horse to drink if you can get it thirsty. Well, he's done that. He's got her thirsty.
Yeah.
And that was his goal. And she says to him, sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Now this, what she says, is real important. A lot of people think, I can just get saved anytime I want to.
Uh-huh.
I can just like that. Well, that is true. But it's not altogether true. I mean, if I was in a car wreck and I was fixing to die, I'd definitely say, God be merciful, me a sinner. Yeah. If I fell out of an airplane, I'd say, God be merciful, me a sinner. I mean, the thief on the cross only had enough time to say, Lord, remember me.
Yeah.
And he was dying and he got saved. And I certainly wouldn't argue about the fact that people can get saved at the fleeting moments of life. And I do believe heaven will declare that a lot of people made it that we thought didn't make it.
Yeah.
And I'll let God be the judge of all of that. But this woman here, she kind of, she's thirsty, she wants the drink. She don't even really understand what she's even asking for. But it sounds so good to her because this great soul winner has done such a good job in his presentation that she says, I'm ready. Give me that water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. She just got a problem, or he'd give it to her right now. And Jesus, being the master soul winner that he is, he puts his finger on the problem in verse 16. Almost everyone has a problem. They get saved, but I would, but. And that but always gets in the way of what they want or what they need. And this woman has one small problem. It's not, morning, Sharon. It's not been mentioned, but the Lord knew about it all along, and he didn't mention it until she got thirsty.
John chapter 4.
Yeah, we're in John chapter 4.
All right.
He didn't mention her problem until she got thirsty. Now, a good soul winner, and I've seen a lot of them, I marvel at how good they were at breaking down the barriers, planting the seed, sometimes without even the person even knowing that they even done it. And I sit there and think,
yeah.
Wow. Well, that's what Jesus done right here. He has got this woman thirsty. She wants the living water. She don't even really know what it is. And her statement, give me this water that I thirst not, tells me that he's got her thirsting for what only he can give.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot more in this chapter. I can't even bring it all out myself. But here in this next verse, he puts his finger on the problem that's keeping her from this water. So Jesus, I mean, just kind of simple terms, brings this out. Jesus saith unto her, go call thy husband and come hither. Now, you know what I mean. I mean, I grew up with a bunch of drunks and dope smokers.
Verse 16.
Yeah, I grew up with a bunch of drunks and dope smokers and man, they was all the time getting in all kind of trouble.
Yeah.
But they didn't want anybody to know about it. And they didn't mind certain people knowing about it, but they didn't want the parish to know about it, or the law to know about it, or nothing like that.
Right.
And here this woman is, she's thinking she's done a pretty good job of making herself look pretty good mm-hmm. to this stranger that's talking to her, and he knows more about her than she even knows.
Yeah.
And so he brings it out right here. He lets the cat out of the bag, so to speak, verse 16. He says unto this thirsty woman, go call thy husband and come hither. Now this woman, this had an effect upon her. And she's somewhat still in denial. And her answer is, the woman answered and said, I have no husband. Now that's kind of one of them denial type answers that a lot of people try to get out of. I don't know how much y'all had in soul winning, but I've heard it all.
Yeah.
I mean, I have. I went to one case, I've been saved several times. I said, is that right? Oh, yeah. I said, is that right? Where do you go to church? Oh, I don't go to church. I said, you're saved many times and don't even go to church. I said, where did you get saved from? He said, well, I was in a car wreck. I was drowning. I said, that ain't the kind of salvation I'm talking about. I'm talking about your soul, boy. But I have. I've heard a lot of things. And really, I've heard a lot of excuses and stuff like that. This woman here, her answer, she's in denial. She don't want to admit her sin. So the woman answers and says to Jesus, I have no husband.
Mm-hmm.
You see that period right after that husband?
Yep.
Well, it didn't stop there.
Uh-oh.
Jesus said unto her, thou hast well said, I have no husband. There's two periods there. For thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that saidest thou truly. Now, he has pinned her to the mat now.
Yeah.
She realized this guy is not like anybody else. He knows so much about her. I'm going to guess she's a little bit embarrassed and concerned about the rest of this conversation they're fixing to have here. I mean, he's got her number. She thinks she's casually talking to someone about a drink from the well, and you know, this conversation has took a different direction now, and she said, who in the world am I talking to? So her conversation, listen to this, verse 19, the woman saith unto him, sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. So she's giving him I can't spit the word out. She's acknowledging that he's somebody spiritual.
Yeah.
That you know, that she says, you know all things here. She says, sir, I perceive thou art a prophet. She's giving him the credentials of someone that knows more than the average person. And then she changes subject and she tries to talk a little spiritual herself. So she acknowledges that who she's talking to is someone greater than she thought. She thinks he's a prophet. So she gets a little spiritual herself. So she says, our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Now, when she's, you know, I've most people I've met, they've got somewhat religion, and they can talk it a little bit as long as it don't get too deep. They don't drown. They can go a little ways in a religious type conversation. So she's changed from water. Now she says, you say that Jerusalem is a place where men ought to worship. And Jesus went, I mean, straight to the point right here in verse 21. Jesus saith unto her, woman, believe me. Boy, those two words right there.
Yeah.
Believe me. Now, she thinks he's a prophet. He's coming across now much greater than a prophet here in this conversation. He says, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Do you understand what he just did right there?
Yeah.
He said, this mountain's nothing. Jerusalem's nothing. If you dwell on this mountain, you're going to miss the most important thing. If you dwell on Jerusalem, you're going to, it's kind of like the Sabbath day.
Yeah.
They had made a God out of the Sabbath day. It had, to some degree, took the place of God, and they forgot the whole purpose for the Sabbath day, and now they were worshiping it instead of observing it. Well, he here tells her, and this is a good answer. He said there's more to this mountain and there's more to Jerusalem. And he says, verse 22, well, actually in verse 21, I may not have finished that verse. He said, "What woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father." I don't know if I finished those last three words or not. But he goes on, and now he's going to rock her boat a little bit right here. He says, "You worship you know not what." And a lot of people do that. Paul talked about some people worship devils. And some people drink the sacrifice of devils. They don't even know what's being given to them. They don't even ask no question. They just receive it. And he talked about, give the sacrifice of devils and worshiping devils. And a lot of churches are in that category since they throw the Bible out. They don't really use the Bible for instruction. Well, they just fall for anything. So Jesus says, "You worship, you know not what." And I'm sad to say the majority of the world's in that category. I certainly don't have any axe to grind here. But most of us, Aaron made those two golden calves while Moses and Joshua was up in the mountain
right, getting
the Ten Commandments. But see, those two golden calves wasn't nothing except they were something that Israel could see. You see, that's not faith. God is a spirit, and he'll mention that here in just a minute.
Yeah.
But most people want to see something. And like I said, I do a lot of correspondence on the internet, try to get some light out there. Most people call God the fairy God. Let's see, what do they call him? They say the sky fairy. They call him all kind of names. And it's because they don't know him. And they're like what this woman is here. They've got a little bit of knowledge, but not enough to do them any good. Jesus says, "You worship, you know not what." And they say, I just worship what I want to and do what I want to. And I said, that'll work okay till you die. They don't really figure that in there. And if you didn't never die, I guess it'd be all right. You can just do whatever you want to, worship whatever you want to. But death, the Bible said in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, as it's appointed unto man once to die, that appointment men will keep. And that appointment, it said, it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. Monday this week, I was standing there talking. I'm in training. I've got three other guys working with me in there, and two of them, I'm one of them, are in training. The other two are already trained. And the guy training on the other press, his name's Jeff, my name's Eddie, and Jared's training me, and Ray's training Jeff. And I'm standing there talking to them Monday this week, and to me, it felt like somebody came up behind me and just bear hugged me real good. And just as soon as it did, I immediately started draining the power. And I'm not talking about like not being able to breathe or nothing. I mean, I'm talking about I was getting ready to fall out on the floor. I thought, what the heck? I took three steps and kind of walked it off. I don't know. I'm kind of like Samson. I'll go out as always. Well, in that case, I did. Well, that afternoon, right at the end of the day, it done it again. Mm. And I don't know, it killed my watch. That's why he sent me a new watch on. It killed my watch. And I thought it might have been demonic. Heck, I don't know. But somebody said I might have had a light stroke. I've never had a stroke. It might have been a stroke. I don't know what it was. I just know this. It felt like death had a hold of me.
Mm.
Well, I'm okay with death.
Yeah.
It's no threat no more. Matter of fact, it wouldn't hurt my feelings to die here today. Y'all just have a big hallelujah time, say, Eddie's kicking up gold. I'll just tell you, there is a day on the calendar of God that if he doesn't come, death will come to all of us. Some way, someday, some fashion. And I'm glad that he destroyed him that had the power of death in Hebrews chapter 4. The Lord took his body through death to destroy him that had the power over death, that is the devil. He is destroyed. Somebody says it's like taking a bee and pulling a stinger out of it. Something bit me on the leg yesterday. I felt it crawling up my leg and down like that. And I felt it between my pants and my leg, and it just bit the fur out of me. And I was trying to find it. I just wanted to see what it was, and I never could find it. I don't know if it's a spider or wasp or what. But, you know, Paul was putting wood on a fire.
Yeah.
And I think it's Acts 26. And a snake jumped out and bit him.
Yeah.
And the barbarians saw him get bit. They said, no doubt this man's a murderer. And then he's suffering to live. But when he shook that snake off, felt no harm. Then he thought he's a god. But what I want to say about all this, God gave us victory over death.
Amen.
It's no longer a threat.
That's right.
It's no longer even applicable. We're going to live forever. And anyway, a lot of people don't have that knowledge. And Jesus is talking to a woman. She's a lost woman. She needs to be saved. He's trying to take it easy on her.
Yeah.
And he says, "Ye worship, ye know not what." We know what we worship. That's important. You know, I don't want to worship devils. I don't want to worship idols. I don't want to worship things sacrificed to idols. I want to know what I'm worshiping. And the Lord tells real clear this woman here. He says, we know what we worship. And if you do know what you worship, I hope you got more sense than to worship something made out of stone or wood or something made by man's hands. And I didn't really want to go here, but I feel kind of compelled to touch a little bit right here. But you go in some churches and it'll just take your breath. I mean, they're just decked out with marble and precious things. And if you're not careful, and I've heard of people visiting Catholic churches, and I won't hint no more, I'll just tell it straight out. And they said they were just caught away by all of the priceless things in the church. Just big marble columns go way up. The ceiling's painted, and I mean, old statement, they spared no expense. But listen, you can't get caught up in that. You got to realize you got to worship the right one in the right way. And the Lord here is trying to help this woman. And a lot of people get deceived when it comes to worship. They don't know how to worship. They don't know what to worship. And they end up worshiping something that's not God. So he clears this up with her. He says, you worship, you know not what. That's one statement. He says, we know what we worship.
Yeah.
That's another statement. Then he says, for salvation is of the Jews. Now, verse 23, he clears this up with this woman. He says, but the hour cometh, and now is. Now you know that's a curveball. This woman has heard some things in this conversation that I'm sure has really said, who am I talking to? But he says, the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers, that's a good statement. Jesus said, we'll read that here in a minute, verse 24. But Jesus said, I am the way and the truth. No man comes to Father but by me. There's no other access to God except through Christ. The Pope can't pray for me. Matter of fact, he needs to pray for himself. But through Christ, my mediator, I have access to God. I have an entrance into the Holy of Holies. I'm accepted into the Beloved, and I can pray for myself. Man, no telling what he might say about me. He might say, Lord, listen, I'm not sure about him, but I'm glad I can pray for myself through Christ. But the Lord here is speaking to this woman. He says, but the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship Him. God not only seeks worship, but He deserves worship. I'm here today. Everybody didn't get up this morning, but I'm here in the land of living. God gave me this day. He gave it to me to enjoy. What did I do? I gave it back to Him. I'm here because I want to be here.
Right.
And if I loved something more than Him, I'd be there instead of here. This is one of the declarations or demonstrations that I love Him supremely. I'm not on the lake fishing. I'm not sitting in front of the TV. I'm not doing something other than coming to the house of God today. That's a declaration of worship that we took time that we could have done something else with. And we gave it to God and said, this is your time. I love you. I want to worship you. I want to sing your songs. I want to hear your songs. I want to hear your word. I want to hear about you. I mean, that's what worship's all about. People tell me they don't believe in worshiping God. I said, well, you worship something. Well, I don't worship nothing. I said, you worship yourself and nothing else. I got me a haircut this week, as you can tell. I could tell when he was going up the middle. I said, well, so much for that. I'd probably cut himself next time. That's all he did. He went like that right there. I said, well, I could probably do that myself at the house. But was he yakking away there, you know. And when he went up that middle, I just said, let it be. I ain't got no problem with the hair sticking up no more, period. But God does seek worship. Not only does He desire worship, but He deserves worship. And Jesus gives the greatest insight to God in the whole Bible right here.
Yeah.
Now this is the Son speaking about God. And Jesus was God the Son. I'm a son of God, but He was God the Son. And so He pulls back the veil on the Godhead and He says, God is a spirit. And they that worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now He'd give Nicodemus almost the same thing when He talked about being born again. He said, the wind blows where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh or and where it goeth. So is everyone that's born of the Spirit. Well, God is a spirit. You'll never see God apart from Jesus.
Right.
He's the only manifestation of God. I don't know if you really get that, what He said right there, but He said God is a spirit. Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father.
That's right.
Now, I believe it was Philip that said, John 14, I think it was Philip said, show us the Father. He said, have I been so long with you? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And they just never did really get it. We don't never really get it neither. But God is a spirit. Carolyn, if God was right there, I couldn't see Him. I could feel it. I've been in the presence of God before, and I've been there when it's so thick. Man, oh man, it's kind of like when they dedicated the temple to Solomon. I mean, you couldn't see. I mean, they just spiritually foggy. You just sit there in awe and say, wow. Kind of like on the Mount of Transfiguration. You just enjoy being in the presence of God. But God is a spirit, and people just they just don't get that. They don't understand it. But Jesus here is making a declaration. He's pulling back the cover of the Godhead and He says, God is a spirit. And they that worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now verse 25, the woman here, she's got to be right now somewhat amazed at this conversation she's had with this Jew. The woman saith unto Him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. Ain't that something she's talking to Christ? She said, I know He's coming.
Yeah.
When He's come, He'll tell us all things. Now, do you notice she mentioned Christ in verse 25? Look at verse 26. Jesus saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am He. She mentions Christ and He said, I am Christ. And Verse 27 said, upon this came his disciples and marveled that he talked with the woman. Yet no man said, what seekest thou, or why talkest thou with her? Verse 28 said, the woman then left her water pot. Now what did she come to the well for?
To get water.
So she's got her jug here, and he's talking to her about a different kind of water.
Yeah.
And she's physically thirsty, or wanting to take care of a physical thirst. That's the reason she's making this journey to the well at the ninth or sixth hour. And she comes to get some physical water for a physical thirst. She's left the water pot now. Somebody, I heard a preacher one time, said she come to the well and he gave her the well instead of giving her a drink from the well. Said she left with the well. And that may be somewhat true.
Yeah.
Said the woman then left her water pot and went her way into the city, and saith to the men, come see a man which told me all things that I ever did. Is not this the Christ? She's witnessing now to others about what she just experienced talking with Jesus here in these preceding verses here. And she's inviting them to come find what she found. She says, come see him. Come see a man that told me all things that I ever did. I mean, he had her number. He told her more about herself than I believe she was even willing to admit.
Yeah.
And verse 30 said, then they went out of the city and came unto him. And that's his whole goal, was not just to win her, but to use her. And somebody say, well, God couldn't use me. Well, he used this woman. She didn't even know she had a spiritual thirst. She didn't even know what her problem was. But he not only got her spiritually, but now she's saved. She's bringing others to him. And that's really why we're not in heaven. I remember the day I got saved. I don't know why I entertained this thought, Joanne, but I thought, why ain't I in heaven? Because, I mean, heaven came down, I have to admit, April 27th, 1988, which was 30 years ago. I got saved. I thought, why ain't I in heaven? And then I had the most strangest conclusion. I thought, there must be something God wants me to do. And there's something God wants us all to do. He said, you're my witnesses. There's people Jerry can win that I can't. There's people I can win that he can't. There's people Joanne could win that Sharon can't or Carolyn can't. And there's people that Sharon and Carolyn can win that Joanne can't. There's people Ed could win that I would probably struggle to even talk to them about the Lord, because he would have something that they would be in agreement with, something they had in common, something they could talk about. And that's what Jesus did. He talked to this woman, then he inserted the conversation about her spiritual thirst, got her saved. There'd be someone that Tavian could talk about that Caden maybe couldn't. You know, we're all unique.
Yeah.
We're all, I guess you'd say, trophies of grace or examples of God's great salvation. I remember when I got baptized at Brotherhood Free Will Baptist Church, a guy I worked with, Mark Bunch, was there. And they baptized me, and he come up there and he said, I refuse to believe God could save someone like you. And I really, for lack of better words, I couldn't even argue with him. I was having a little bit of trouble with it myself. But this woman, she comes up here, the perfect candidate. I'm going to guess this whole town knew her background, knew these things that this stranger brought out. And she's been in kind of the shadows. She's been kind of slipping around. And now, buddy, she's not hiding no more. And she says, come see a man which told me all things that I ever did. Is not this the Christ? Then they went out of the city and came unto him. And we'll stop right there. We'll put a little dash here. I got my new Bible here. Got my new tie on. Danny bought my tie. I'm not real good at tying ties. I've done the best I could with it. But I wanted to wear it, and I had to wear it's gray to match it up there. Let's see here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either time, I'd have slept them off leaving tied. I have so much difficulty tying. But I did finally get it tied. Let me turn this thing off here.